So in our last class, we were ending in the last section of 13 through 21, and we left off in Numbers. We were looking at something in Numbers 13. So if you remember, in Numbers 13, we were looking at where it mentioned the verse 3, the heads of the sons of Israel, and it was naming off these tribes. So that's kind of, we left off talking about that because we were seeing this numbering that had been going on as far as the 12 sons or the 12 tribes. And we saw the 12, the 9.5 and all that. We're not really going to look at the numbering part. I think we spoke enough about that. But there is a little bit left that I would like for us to look at. Because if you remember, we looked at verses 8 and 11 and how it was describing Joseph's sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. If you would, let's turn over to Genesis 48 for a second. Genesis 48. We're going to be able to get some more information from here. I think it's going to help explain some of these things, especially when we see how some of that was worded in Numbers 13. So in Genesis 48, it starts off, Joseph is going to see his father, Jacob. And it says in verse 1, "Now it came about after these things that Joseph was told, 'Behold, your father is sick.' So he took his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, with him." So he goes to see his father. And then in verses 5 and 6, we're going to see a little bit more details about this inheritance. Verse 5, it says, "And now your two sons, who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt, are mine." And then it says, "Ephraim and Manasseh shall be mine, as Reuben and Simeon are. But," verse 6, "your offspring that you have born after them shall be yours. They shall be called by the names of their brothers in their inheritance." So remember, that's the things we're talking about, this inheritance, the lands in these tribes. Let's jump down to verse 11. Verse 11, "And Israel said to Joseph, 'I never expected to see your face, and behold, God has let me see your children as well.'" So it's very interesting what we see taking place here in verses 13 and following. Let's look at verse 13. And it's starting to explain something. So we'll see in verse 13 how Joseph is about to present his sons to his father, Jacob, Israel. So in verse 13, it says, "And Joseph took them both." He took both of his sons. Ephraim with his right hand. Remember, he's handing them to his father. So he took Ephraim with his right hand towards Israel, his father's left hand, and Manasseh with his left hand towards Israel's right hand, and brought them close to them. Okay? So, and we're going to see in verse 14 how Jacob, or Israel, receives them. Now remember, Joseph's doing it in this way because of who is the oldest and who is the youngest. So that's why he is taking the youngest with his left hand. I'm about to say it backwards. Yeah, saying it backwards. He's going to take the youngest with his right hand because he's going to present him to his father's left hand, giving the birthright, or the older one, with his left hand to the right. So we see verse 14, "But Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on the forehead So here's Israel. Now we're turning the other way around. Here's Israel. Here's Jacob. And the way that he's receiving Ephraim and Manasseh, it says that Israel stretched out his right hand, okay, the blessing, and puts it on the head of Ephraim, the younger, who was younger, and his left hand on Manasseh's head. So he crossed his hands, although Manasseh was the firstborn. So we see this taking place. And then we'll read verses 15 and 16. And it said, he blessed Joseph and said, the God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads, and may my name live on in their, or in them, and the names of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and may they grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. And then now we're going to see Joseph's reaction to this in verses 17 and 18. And it's interesting because when you think of Jacob, he knows a little something about the younger one receiving the blessing. But anyway, so verses 17 and 18. When Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand on Ephraim's head, it displeased him. And he grasped his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. And Joseph said to his father, not so, my father, for this one is the firstborn. Place your right hand on his head. So I don't know if that was because maybe he thought there was confusion. But there wasn't any confusion. We're going to see that Jacob refuses to do that. And he explains that. Let's read verse 19. This is talking about Jacob. It says, but his father refused and said, I know, my son, I know. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. Talking about the oldest. However, his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his descendants shall become a multitude of nations. And he blessed them that day, saying, by you Israel shall pronounce blessings, saying, may God make you like Ephraim and Manasseh. Thus he put Ephraim before Manasseh. And then we'll go down to the very last verse in this section. It says, and I give you one portion more than your brothers. Maybe that helps explain some of this other portion, or why it numbered it in the way that it did when we were looking at some of these verses in Joshua, and also in Numbers when we saw what it was saying. So, because as far as the birthright, I think it helps explain maybe some of what we see in Numbers 13, verses 8 and 11. We'll go back over to Numbers. Numbers 13, 8 and 11. So in 13, 8, it says, from the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, or Joshua, the son of Nun. And then verse 11, from the tribe of Joseph, from the tribe of Manasseh. So maybe that's why it says that in verse 8, because he is the one, Ephraim is the one that had the blessing. Any thoughts or comments on that section? Nope? Okay. Well, I hope maybe that helps help us think about some of that, or at least it's some good information to have when it comes to that. So So now we can get to the last point of our last lesson that we didn't get to. And the very last question that I put on the 13 through 21, it says, how was it determined who received which portion? You know, how did they know? Because remember in this section, we'll turn over to Joshua 18. In this section, they're talking about these seven tribes and what their portion is going to be. And we're going to look at 18:6 for a second first. Because we're going to see, I tell you what, let's go over to 14 first. Let's back up a little further. We're going to go to Joshua 14. Joshua 14. Let's look at verse 2. So we're going to see this idea of, you know, how they were to know who was getting what. And, you know, I think in our last class, Wally left off. He was bringing out some of that as far as the, you know, it wasn't up to them to decide. It was the idea of these lots. And that's what we're going to see here. It said, verse 2, it says, by the lot of their inheritance. And then if you go over to 15:1, it says, now the lot. So we see this idea going over and over about these lots. And then when you get into 18:6, in Joshua 18:6, it says, and you shall describe the land in seven divisions and bring the description here to me, and I will cast lots for you. So we see this is going to be part of the process. This is how we're going to figure out who's going to get what. But it says, I will cast lots for you here before the Lord our God. So we see God's involvement in this. He's going to do this before the Lord. And the Lord's involved. Let's look over at Proverbs 16. Proverbs 16, 33. Proverbs 16:33 says, the lot is cast into the lap, but its very decision is from the Lord. So the idea that with these lots, there's involvement from the Lord. And then we'll go look at one more. We can look at Acts 1:24. Acts 1:24. And it said, and they prayed and said, thou, Lord, who knowest the hearts of all men, show which one of these two thou hast chosen. So they're wanting to find out who the Lord has chosen. And in verse 25, thou hast chosen to occupy the ministry and the apostleship from which Judas turned aside, to go to his own place. And they drew lots for them. So we see the process, in order to find out who the Lord had chosen, they were to draw lots. So the Lord's involvement in this is how he showed this decision. So we need to understand that this lots, it wasn't like, well, we're going to throw this out there and see what our luck is. It's not like rolling dice or something like that, you know, let's just going to see what comes about. No, this was the process that they were using. They were going to draw the lots, and the Lord is involved in this. He was the one that was deciding who was getting what. This was just how this was to be communicated. Anything to add on that? Any thoughts? about lots, and there was a lots of lots. Okay. All righty. Well, if that's all we have, then we will go into our last section. Does anybody need a copy of Joshua 22 through 24? Does everybody have that? Do you need one? Okay. Anybody else? All righty, so Joshua 22 through 24.
I'll make one comment about the law.
All right, sir.
This is not him.
Correct.
Today.
Right.
You've already made one point, which is basic and very good, that the law was a matter of God's decision, not theirs. It seems to be a full of why we don't know. That's what he's told.
Yes, sir.
Secondly, again, that today that is wrong, you gain and somebody else is lost.
Right.
Not the case there.
Correct. Yes, sir. Yeah, this isn't gaining at someone else's loss, and this is God's involvement. And like gambling, that's luck. This isn't luck. So, yes, sir, good points. Good points. Anybody else? Okay. Well, let's get into Joshua 22 through 24 then. Joshua 22 through 24. Broke this down into six sections just to show kind of how we're going to address it. We have 22, 1 through 9, and that's going to talk about the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, and the land, or that they're going to return to their land that was beyond the Jordan. And then in 22, 10 through 34, we're going to talk about this, what they call the altar of witness. So we're going to see some more things about what that is. Then you get into chapter 23, and verses 1 through 16, Joshua exalts them to be faithful. And then we go into 24, 1 through 28, and that's the Joshua's farewell challenge, if you will, to the nation. And then the 29 through 31 is Joshua's death and his legacy. And then 32 through 33 is the concluding notes. And it'll talk about Joseph and Eleazar. So that's what we're going to look at in these three chapters, the last three chapters of Joshua. So let's start in 22, Joshua 22. So Joshua 22, 1 through 9, that's the Reubenites, the Gadites, the half-tribe of Manasseh returned to the land beyond the Jordan. So, and they were away from this land, if we remember, because of a pledge that they had made. And so what was that pledge? Remember, they were to help their brothers. And if we back up into Joshua 1, if we think back to then, in Joshua 1, 12, it said, "And to the Reubenites and the Gadites and to the half-tribe of Manasseh, Joshua said, remember the word which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, saying, the Lord your God gives you rest and will give you this land. Your wives, your little ones, your cattle shall remain in the land which Moses gave you beyond the Jordan, but you shall cross before your brothers in battle array, all your valiant warriors, and shall help them until the Lord gives your brothers rest, and he gives you. And they also possess the land which the Lord your God is giving them. Then you shall return to your own land. and possess that which Moses, a servant of the Lord, gave you beyond the Jordan towards the sunrise. So we see that they wanted to stay there, but they're like, no, you need to help your brothers. So we'll go to Numbers again, but we're going to look at chapter 32, verse 5. In Numbers 32, verse 5, it says, and they said, if we have found favor in your sight, now this is talking about those 2.5 tribes on the east side of the Jordan. So if we have found favor in your sight, let this land be given to your servants as a possession. Do not take us across the Jordan. But Moses said to the sons of Gad and to the sons of Reuben, shall your brothers go to war while yourselves sit here? Now, why are you discouraging the sons of Israel from crossing over into the land which the Lord has given them? So they wanted this land that they were going to get on the other side of Jordan, or this east side of Jordan, and they wanted to stay there. Moses poses a question to them in verse 6, shall your brothers go to war while you sit here? And in verse 7, he says, now why are you discouraging the sons of Israel from crossing over into the land which the Lord has given them? Why are you discouraging them? And then the warning comes in verse 8. He says, you know, this is what your fathers did. How they discouraged the sons of Israel so that they did not go into the land which the Lord had given them. And the Lord's anger burned in that day. And he swore, saying, none of these men who came up from Egypt, verse 11, from the 20 years old and upward, shall see the land which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. For they did not follow me fully, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua, the son of Nun. For they have followed the Lord fully. So you had two men. They were the only two that were faithful. And that's what he warns against. He said, don't discourage the others. This is what has happened before. Don't discourage them. So the Lord's anger burned against Israel. And he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years. Until the entire generation of those who had done evil in the sight of the Lord was destroyed. And we've already seen that. But that's what he's warning against. They were discouraged, and don't do that, because look at the result. Look at the result of this. Verse 14 says, now behold, you have risen up in your father's place, a brood of sinful men, to add still more to the burning anger of the Lord against Israel. For if you turn away from following him, he will once more abandon them in the wilderness, and you will destroy all these people. So they're warned, don't do this. Don't discourage them. You need to get out there with your brothers. So then verse 16 says, then they came near to him and said, we will build here sheepfolds for our livestock and cities for our little ones, but we ourselves will be armed, ready to go before the sons of Israel until we have brought them to their place while our little ones live in the fortified cities, because the inhabitants of the land we will not return to our homes until every one of the sons of Israel has possessed his inheritance. For we will not have an inheritance with them on the other side of the Jordan and beyond, because our inheritance has fallen to us on the side of the Jordan to the east. And then we see what Moses tells them in verses 20 through 21. Moses said to them, if you will do this, if you will arm yourselves before the Lord for the war, and all of you armed men cross over the Jordan before the Lord until he has driven his enemies out from before him, and the Lord is subdued before the Lord, or the land, sorry, the land is subdued before the Lord. So if you'll do this, then afterward you shall return and be free of obligation toward the Lord and toward Israel, and this land shall be yours for a possession before the Lord. So it says, if you'll do this, then you will have done what you need to. You will have supported your brothers, and you will be able to return back to your land once they have theirs. So we see this idea that they would be able to return home. And then when you go back to Joshua 1:15, we saw that it says, until the Lord gives your brothers rest, and he gives you, and they also possess the land which the Lord your God has given them, then you shall return to your home, or your own land, and possess that which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you beyond the Jordan towards the sunrise. So we had just read that. So this is what they do. And then, so now they're free of this obligation. So back in 22, where we were, Joshua 22, verse 4, Joshua 22:4 says, and now the Lord your God has given rest to your brothers, and he spoke to them. Therefore, turn now and go to your tents, to the land of your possession, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you beyond the Jordan. So they were to return to their land. They were free of this obligation. So we see that this has now gone full circle. They have pledged to help their brothers in conquering the land of Canaan. And then in return, once this was complete, they could go back to their land. And we see all of that has been accomplished. That's all done because they're going back to their land now. It's said that they are free to do so, and they are free of that obligation because they have met that obligation. So we see that in that first section. Any questions or anything to add? Yes, sir, Craig.
Find a land that's suitable. There's probably no enemies in the desert.
Anybody else? Any other thoughts or comments? So he uses them that way. Okay. Thank you, John. Anybody else? Okay. Thank you all. So in this next little section, the section 10 through 34, we're going to read about this altar of witness where it's built and what it's purpose was and how it was received at first. So there's some things going on in this situation. So as far as where it was built, which side of the Jordan was this built on? I heard somebody. West, okay. So it was on that the side of Canaan. Verse 11 said, verse 11b, if you will, said that they have built an altar at the frontier of the land of Canaan in the region of the Jordan on the side belonging to the sons of Israel. So, from what I'm understanding, it was built on, right off the Jordan, but on that west side. So that's where it's claiming that this was built. Now, I also posed a question: what did the sons of Israel think it was, and what did it almost cause? But before we talk about what they thought it was, let's talk about what it almost caused. What was that it almost caused?
War.
Okay. So that'd been like a civil war there. So it almost caused that. We see that in verse 12. They're ready to go up against them in war. Because it says, and when the sons of Israel heard of it, the whole congregation of the sons of Israel gathered themselves at Shiloh to go up against them in war. So what it's stating here is they heard about this and they are ready for war. And that's one of the things we're gonna see as far as being the problem in this little section. Because they took something and they ran with it and didn't get information about it. They had an idea what was going on, or at least what they thought. But as we will see, until there was communication, until they spoke to one another about what was going on, and then once explanation was made, then it's a whole different story, because they were reacting with a false understanding. And that's going to be something that we need to think about too, how we can do that. So the key point that we'll look at is, let's not be quick to think something. Especially we're going to see in this point, these are their brothers. They have been in war with these guys, with them on the same side. They've been serving together, if you will, and then all of a sudden they're going to just think the worst of them. I mean, their brothers were fighting beside them for the Lord, so now all of a sudden they don't serve the Lord anymore. So just some things for us to think about when you get into that.
Craig,
yes, sir.
Part of that is to have to be careful about what we hear.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. When I was in Oklahoma,
Yes, sir. Good point. Good point. Because it states that. I mean, they heard something and they reacted. And they just reacted based on where their thoughts took them when they heard something. And instead of communicating and finding out more about what's actually going on, which we'll see that happens. But before that, I mean, hey, they're ready for war. You know, we heard what you're doing and we're all gathered. We're going to come fight you now. So that's a good lesson for us. Did I see another comment or no? Okay. So, yes. Good point, Steve. So, what did Israel think was going on? So this is what we just said. They heard, and then this is what was running through their head. Said that the sons of Israel came to them and spoke to them, and they said that they committed an unfaithful act to God. Let's go over to verse 16. So we see in 15b is where it says that they spoke to them, and then in 16 it said, thus says the whole congregation of the Lord, what is this unfaithful act which you have committed against the God of Israel, turning away from following the Lord this day by building yourselves an altar to rebel against the Lord this day? So they're accusing them of building something to rebel against the Lord, telling them that they no longer follow the Lord. And verse 17, we see that it says, is not the iniquity of Peor enough for us, from which we have not cleansed ourselves to this day, although a plague came on the congregation of the Lord? And so they start talking about their fear of things. So verse 18, it said that you must turn away this day from following, or I'm saying that wrong. It's posed as a question that you must turn away this day from following the Lord, and it will come about if you rebel against the Lord today that he will be angry with the whole congregation of Israel tomorrow. Now, where they were going with this wasn't necessarily wrong way to think about it, because they're gonna make a point here that it's a true point. But the problem is the reaction is based off of something that's not true. That's the problem, you know, because they're making the point. It's like, you know, what y'all are doing, this is gonna affect us. And then it talks about in verse 20. You know, because they bring up the example of Achan. It says, did not Achan, the son of Zerah, act unfaithfully in the things under the ban? So we just read about that not too long ago. Because the way he acted according to these things under the ban, didn't that affect all of Israel up to a point? Until they finally found out who it was, got rid of him and his family and all of his belongings. And that was to be an example to bring fear, I guess you could say, or make people think before they do things. And it worked, because here they're saying, look, you're about to bring something on us. But the problem is that would be a true statement if it was true where they were going with their reaction. That's the problem. They heard, and then they didn't gather the facts. And they, hang on just a second, and then they reacted based on that. Yes, ma'am. Yes, got 2 minutes. Okay. Which verse are you referring to? 16, okay. Yeah, it is a good fear that they had. I mean, that is the right attitude towards that. The whole problem is what they were basing it off of. That was the problem. What they were basing it off of was not fact. They were they heard something, and they ran with where their thoughts took them, and they didn't back it up with what is really going on. And again, that's when we will talk more in our next class, because we will finish this up. It doesn't look like we're going to get much further. So the next class, we will finish up Joshua, and then we will get into to Judges, the introduction. So if you haven't already, please pick up a copy of Judges, the introduction. And there's also a chart I put back there that I had borrowed from Steve, because we'll see this, these six different times, that there's quite a bit of detail of what we're going to call the four S's that was going on. And you'll see, we'll just pick that up, and I'll give a little more explanation when we get that far. So it looks like we have about 1 minute. Are there any other comments or thoughts? Yes. Yeah. On bad intel. And again, I mean, you think about it, this is brothers. And they have, you know, they have been right there together fighting for this same cause. And then now all of a sudden they're going to accuse them for something. It doesn't make sense. So again, that's why we're going to see gathering the facts or communicate, go and talk with them. We'll get to that they do that. But up until that point, nothing was resolved. Now, once they do that, we see everything's fine and everything goes planned and everybody's happy. But up to that point, it's not, because it's based on false information or where they went with the information that they had. Are you buzzing me? Oh, do you? We need to fix that clock. That says we're a minute over. Go ahead, Craig. Yeah, and like you said, yes, they were willing to go to war with it, because their reaction wasn't necessarily wrong, but it was because they were reacting on the wrong information, and that's what we got to be careful of, because we can react the right way about things, but if we're reacting because of the wrong information, there's no need for that, and we're still wrong. Yes, sir. That's a good way of putting it, because we can easily swing too far one way or the other. But I think we're being buzzed. So thank y'all. Appreciate all your comments.